This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Wonder Horse. I'm Megan Aftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, this was a new group for me. This is their first album together, cohesively, the four of them as a group. What makes this so special for them as a band?
Well, I had remembered Dead Pretties, which was Jacob Slater's first band, which sort of dissolved in 2017. During the pandemic, he sort of on his own, but with this what is now his band, wrote and recorded an album called Cub, which was lovely. It sort of it almost had not an Americana bent, but it was definitely much milder than what you're going to hear on Midas. In some ways, this band has not disavowed, but they've sort of drawn themselves away from what they were doing on Cub and really went for something that was more akin to what Jacob and Harry and Jamie and Pete were interested in doing, which was, reveling in a sort of early 90s Seattle grunge and hard rock and doing that, but with the flourish of what they had brought from the first album, which is a little bit of a like folk understanding, a little bit of a, Dylan and Neil Young understanding. I think the thing to really grasp is the fact that this is a really great guitar band. And you can hear that on these extraordinary solos on this record, like on Airplane. Jacob is a really interesting vocalist, too. And if you hear, aspects of maybe Green Chattin of Fontaine's D.C. or even a little bit of Kurt Cobain, I think that that's a fair assessment of what he brings to the songs as a vocalist, as a singer, as a lyricist. They've toured with Fontaine's D.C., actually. They're handled by the same management team. So if you are a fan of that sort of return of a gritty, grungy guitar rock, Wonder Horse is really an interesting band to pursue and find and see them live. They are galvanizing live.
So what are we going to hear first in this session?
We are actually going to hear the title track of Midas. I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and this is Wonder Horse with Midas.
The voice inside the seat came calling down the telephone. Somewhere between a chest bone and a nursery rhyme. I heard the rattle stick, it was shaking in his invitation. And the whites of his knuckles on the other end of the line. Midas. Yeah! Midas. La 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 la. Midas. Yeah! Midas. Stepped inside his office in the whole place in the city. He said, come a little closer, kid. Come on, don't be shy. Says to find a fracture in his a tombstone facelift. And he fixed me with the coldness of the kingdom in his eye. Midas. Yeah. Midas. La 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 la. Midas. Yeah. Midas. I'm talking to you, kid. You think you got a deal, yeah? Threw his head back like a pelican and straightened his tie. Ha, ha, ha. Stop that, man. You're making me kind of nervous. And with a kick of his silver fingers, I was falling through the sky. Midas, yeah. Midas, la, 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 la. Midas, yeah. Midas.
I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that was Wonder Horse in Studio A with an electrifying live version of Midas, which is the title track of the band's second album. Wonder Horse, which is Jacob Slater, Harry Fowler, Jamie Staples, and Pete Wooden, were called Indie's Best Secret in the aftermath of Wonder Horse's debut album, Cub. But the secret is really out with Midas, their second album. It is a singular vision with songs of singular names capturing a rawness, spirit, and aesthetic that has long been nurtured at Minnesota's Pachyderm recording studios where Wonder Horse recorded Midas. I have so enjoyed following this band's evolution and very pleased to welcome Jacob, Harry, Jamie, and Pete of Wonder Horse to FUV in New York City. I can't tell you how absolutely blown away I was when I first heard Midas about what you have accomplished here. And Cub came out in 2022. And is it fair to say, Jacob, that that was initially more kind of your own project, even though these guys were involved? Whereas with Midas, you are now really fully diplomatically a band.
Yeah, I think the all the songs on Cub are from quite a sort of wide bracket of time. Some of them are as old as, you know, I think I wrote one of them when I was 17. So it spans a sort of large number of years, whereas all the stuff on Midas was sort of written, well, lots of it was written in the studio, and we were all there, so we were all there to kind of put our own unique creative imprint on a lot of these songs when they were still in their embryonic stages, you know, when they weren't sort of totally fully formed yet. And I think that's part of the magic of why the songs sound the way they do on that record, because they haven't actually fully spread their wings yet.
What has changed and altered in your relationship? Because you've all known each other for a while. So how does that coalesce into knowing, you know, you're working well together as friends, but how can you work together really well as a band, Jamie?
Well, I suppose, yeah, I mean, we've always been friends and enjoyed playing together. I think when we first started out, it was, you know, off the back of COVID, or maybe it was even still happening, just a very strange time, and Jacob just had these songs that we needed to come to life and be released. So that was our mission then. And then I think once we were all able to get back on the road and tour and normalize things, I think we just grew as a unit. And then when it came to recording Midas, I don't know, everything was aligned for that, for, yeah. Mm.
Right.
I think it's like what Jacob said, you know, a lot of the songs, all of the songs on Cub, he already had, you know, in his head. And we were there in the studio watching that song process happen right. on the second album. So it's just kind of easier to understand that process and kind of each of us individually kind of bouncing off it together to kind of capture something that was just a lot more raw, I think.
Thank you, Pete. I'm looking back at Jacob again, and you had an experience with Dead Pretties, which was your initial band, that sort of the same year that you released your single on Nice Swan, actually, one of my favorite labels. Yeah. It was the same year also that the band kind of just didn't work out and fell apart. So what were you really being careful of with Wonder Horse in terms of how it was coming together for you and what you wanted to do differently this time that was not represented in your experience with Dead Pretties?
Well, I think I wanted to uphold the work ethic that Dead Pretties started with, which quickly changed as, you know, you sign a bunch of sort of teenage boys to a record contract and give them some money and kind of watch it all go wrong, you know, which it did. So I didn't want that to happen again. Because we actually had one of my regrets about the Dead Pretties period is that we never actually released a record, because it would have been good, even though it probably would have made me cringe now because it's stuff I wrote when I was so much younger. It would have been good to have like a physical, tangible record of of the music made then. So yeah, I think that was a big thing with this, was actually staying really focused and getting that first record out, and just making the music the sort of center point of the whole thing without getting distracted with the other stuff, which is quite easy to get distracted with, you know.
Before we move on, I'm curious, and this feels like such a dumb question to ask, but is every song on Midas is a single word? Is there a reason behind that, aside from it being a really easy set list to write up? Is there a reason why there's a single word for every single title on this album? It just sort of worked out that way. Yeah,
I think once half the record, we kind of realized that half the record was, the titles were all just one word, and then adding adding an extra one after that sort of felt strange.
It's funny because you do, this feels very much like an album. You should listen to it from beginning to middle to end.
Yeah.
That there's a complete thought process that is happening from the first song to the, you know, like the sixth song being Superman. It like there's a reason why it's there in that place. There's a reason why the album ends with Aeroplane, which I thought was really fantastic. And then also you worked with Craig, is it Sylvie? Craig Sylvie, who has worked with, you know, people like Florence and the Machine, but he's also worked with Sam Fender, who you had also toured with. Why was Craig right for you to bring in? Did you connect with him through Sam?
No, it was actually Danny.
Danny, who was someone who worked on first record.
Yeah, the engineer on the first record. She's had a long-standing relationship with Craig, and she kind of heard about what we were trying to do with the second one, and she said, "Well, I think you should talk to Craig because that's the kind of stuff he's into, and he'll kind of keep you on track." I mean, the first thing Craig said to us when we sat down with him, he told us he didn't really like the first record, which is why we really liked him, you know, because it's so rare to have someone be honest with you in the music industry, you know. Quite often everyone's like, "Oh, you're so great, and you're so this, and you're so..." And he kind of sat down and was like, "No, I didn't really like the first record." You know, he's American. He's like, "Yeah, I didn't really like the first record, and it was okay, but it could have been, you know, a bit bolder. We thought it was a bit sort of middle of the road." And we were like, "Yeah, we want to work with you." You know, that was great.
Whose idea was it to go to Cannon Falls, Minnesota, to Pachyderm Recording Studios? Was that your idea?
Was that
Craig's
idea?
Craig,
yeah.
He'd been there before. Yeah. He'd worked there before, right?
He'd been, had he? I don't know if he had, actually.
I think he'd maybe... He hadn't been there. I think he'd always wanted to work there. Or if he had, he'd never been in the capacity of producer there. I don't think he had been there.
I think one of the other options was going to be Steve Albini's studio, in Chicago, right? But no, we decided to go to Pachyderm, I think because of the sort of history it had within Utero, and it was an album we all pretty much grew up on, you know. I think... It felt like it was the right choice.
The right choice. And Albini did The Wedding Present, Sea Monsters there, In Utero with Nirvana, mm-hmm. PJ Harvey's Rhythm. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Albini's spirit is very much present at that studio, and you can really feel it on Midas, on this album as well.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of like lo-fi, spare, gritty. What is it about what you were hearing in Albini's production that you and Craig could then discuss and say, "This is what we're looking for. This is what we're seeking"?
I don't know. I mean, it was definitely I think it was the live room that was the most attractive thing about the studio. And then beyond that was actually just the residential element to it. It's a really beautiful place to stay and get lost in. And I suppose, we did take a few leaves out of Albini's book, maybe take a few tricks that he might have used. Nothing too extensive,
but specific that you can
like kind of mic placement?
Yeah,
and, you know, we'd
mic placement, you said,
and like we'd have the guitar amps in a different room, but we'd keep the doors open so they would be bleed into the main room. In the room mics, if you were to listen to any of them isolated, you'd, you know, hear pretty much everything a little bit,
right?
So it helps create a more live sound in a recording when you do that, yeah.
It also means that everything remains imperfect, you know. If anyone sort of makes a mistake, you can hear it in other people's mics and stuff. Which is great because you kind of share this responsibility of, you kind of know from the get-go that it's not going to be perfect, and you embrace that, which is, I think, a big ethos of, this record.
You go for a take that overall has a great feeling to it, and we all had a good exercise in letting go of.
Listen to July, you can actually hear Jacob's vocals in the room mic in the second verse, I think, first take. And obviously Wood, he was just shouting the
scratch
lyrics
vocal,
and it was catching on the room mics.
It was from the live take, wasn't it? I think.
I think
July is the vocal take from the live take that we did as a band. You just, because I was screaming it in the room, you pick it up, so it almost sounds like an echo when you listen to the track. There's an echo of the vocal, and that's the original live take in there. Because we couldn't get rid of it, you know.
I'm glad you mentioned July, because that when I heard that for the first time, it's a painful track to listen to lyrically. It feels like almost a cry for help, something that happened in the past, something that was experienced, something that could be about someone else that you cared about. It segues beautifully out of Superman, which is a very different kind of track. You write Jacob in a really personal way, I would assume.
A lot of the time, yeah.
A lot of the time.
It's becoming slightly more abstract than it was on Cub. Like Cub, everything is like totally personal. It's all kind of, whereas on Midas, there's still a lot of personal stuff in there, but like there's starting to step outside of myself a little bit. But it still does remain quite personal. I think you're right.
Was the stripping back, because I did notice the lyrical strip back between Cub and Midas, that you did more with fewer words on Midas. Was that was something that was deliberate as you were writing, or as you were all sort of working on these songs?
I think when some of the Cub songs were written, words were really not a focal point of the writing. I just wrote them because there had to be some. Whereas, and since that time, I was, like I said before, some of those songs are from when I was 17, 18 years old. And since then, lyrics have become very important, you know, some maybe for me starting to become the most important part of the whole thing from my writing sort of point of view, at least sometimes. There are some songs that still, I think it's great just to like, just have something that makes a lot of noise and you can throw some words on. It's not always the most important thing. But I think it was the lyrics on Midas, it was part of the ethos that we embrace that goes across the whole album, which is trying to do as much as you can with as few elements as possible. And it was the same with the words, you know, like most of the songs are three chords, or two chords, very, very simple stripped back parts. And it was like that with the words. It's like, you know, pick the words you want to say and kind of use them well and make sure that they have weight. There's a couple of things I probably would have done differently still, but I think I'm pretty pleased with the lyrical content on the record.
You know, taking a step back, you with Cub, which you've talked about, that Craig's criticism of it was something that pleased all of you. But you're still doing some Cub tracks in your set, correct? You've not abandoned that entirely.
No.
Yeah.
So today you did Teal, which is from the first album, and sort of again feels autobiographical. Yes, no, maybe.
Yeah,
it does. What? Because Teal was such a powerful song on the first album, I was happy that you haven't abandoned that, because I do think that that's a great track. Can you tell me a little bit about that song, and then we'll hear the band do it?
Yeah, it was just about a very dear friend of mine who got very sick, and we were very close, and I kind of just wrote about it, and they're a lot better now, which is great. But yeah, at the time it was really heavy. Just, I guess, like anything like that, sometimes it moves you to write something, and sometimes it doesn't. In this case, it did, and that's the song, you know?
This is Wonder Horse for FUV Live Sessions with Teal in Studio A.
I always remember the time that we met. It was somebody's party. You were wearing a black dress, filling the shadows, chameleon-esque. When we were together, when we were 15, when nothing is real, then you know what I mean. Slept with that dancer, I didn't mean it. It was all in a dream, babe, all in a dream. Just a dream. But I hadn't seen you in a couple of years. You've been at the doctors, you call me in tears. Jacob, baby, I'm broken, I can't be fixed. Glad they think it's my kidneys, they don't know what it is. But how could this happen, man? I'm just a kid, I got something to live for, but so much to give. Now I live in a basement, a blade in my wrist. I think this is over, I think this is it. You got all these friends, they say that they need you. When you need them, they just get up and leave you. One of them said, oh, I don't care if this kills you. But what if it did, Kate? What if it killed her? What would you do then? Hope you'd be sorry, hope you'd go to her grave. Apologize for me, all the time that she gave you. Every time you were worried, that's cause she was your friend, man. Hope that you're sorry. It's true. When I was using just a
my shoes, I would be jumping. And that's when I felt it. It conquered my heart. It was the light of a candle in the depths of the dark. There was a fire, it danced in her eyes. A beautiful world and a beautiful mind. A beautiful man. Yeah, a beautiful man. A beautiful man. Yeah, you got a beautiful.
And that is Wonder Horse on FUV Live Sessions with Teal, which is from their first album, Cub. I'm Kara Manning. I'm here with Jacob, Harry, Jamie, and Pete of the band. And Pete, you were saying that the reason why you chose to play that today is?
Is because we didn't really get the opportunity to promote Cub in the way that we wanted out here in the US. We had a very limited time here last year and the year before that. And we feel like it still needs to, you know, see the light of day.
Breathe. What are you still including from the set that's from Cub?
It varies, really.
Yeah.
I think we're definitely quite focused on Midas now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll chop in a few songs.
Are you're doing all 10 songs from Midas in your set? Are you including, or is there any that have sort of become a little...
Probably not in one sitting, but
right.
but we play all of them.
You play all of them in your sets.
You know, if we did 5 gigs in a row, we'd probably, over the course of that time, play every song on the record, yeah.
You know, I'm so struck by, like, some of the jams and Cathedrals and Airplane, and I'm wondering where does, in the writing of some of those songs at Pachyderm, did some of the instrumental sections, the solos, evolve from working out the songs for a long span of time, or did you have a really clear vision of what you wanted, like, from the start?
I think a lot of these songs that were written there, which is over half the record, we tried to capture them before we had too much time to kind of think about them. I mean, Airplane, for instance, we'd been listening to Beggar's Banquet, that record by The Stones, which is actually referenced in the lyric. And I, yeah, just picked up a guitar and started playing those three chords, and the lyrics came real quick, and Harry sat down and started playing the riff over it. We went into the studio, these boys put their parts on it, and I think that was it. We, you know, by lunchtime, that, you know, we kind of had it. But I think it was Jamie who kind of suggested that we just go round and round on that end bit, and we just kept playing because it felt good, and it felt like that's where the song was telling us that we needed to go. And I think that was a big thing on the whole record, was because a lot of these things had just been written on the day that they were recorded. It just kind of, it's so easy to second guess yourself in that situation. So we were kind of letting the songs tell us what to do rather than the other way around. And I think, yeah, Jamie just said, just keep on playing. So, yeah.
Well, and then that left the space for Harry's solo eventually.
Yeah. And we, you know, we had a few ideas about where it could have gone. Like, it could have just been a fade out. It could have been a live fade out, which it actually is on the record. It's a live fade out of all of us.
We're just playing quieter and quieter and quieter.
That's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. You know, hearing this album too, it would not be out of place to hear this album being released on Sub Pop in 1991, along with anything by Soundgarden or Alice in Chains or Nirvana or Mad Season. Or you capture a particular aesthetic and time, even though you can hear like ripplings of Neil Young in there or Bob Dylan. But that was it. It seems. Do you all share a similar sort of passion for that era of music, because that was not necessarily big in the you were like children, tiny, even born at that point, when grunge was at its apex. But was that something that was discovered or like seized upon as being appealing in some way?
When we were like 14 or something, like grunge music was a massive influence on us. And I remember listening to the album Bleach a lot by Nirvana, and then that sort of brought you into listening to Dirt by Alice in Chains. We listened to a lot of Ten by Eddie, just Eddie.
Pearl Jam, yeah.
Pearl Jam. Bloody hell. That music is, and that particular time is a massive influence on. Or not, had a massive influence on us. I think it had more of an influence on us when we come to the States, because we realize all that music, you know, comes from here, and there's a real feeling that the you realize how it came to be, and you can really feel where those songs come from. And when we're in Minnesota making the album, realize, you know, that was the place where like the Replacements grew up and stuff, and it's just like you can kind of feel the history here in the States from that era much more than you can when you're back in the UK. So yeah, I think coming to America and making that album really lent to bringing that sound out.
And you toured with the Pixies too. Yeah. So did you get a chance to talk to them a bit about working with Steve?
We didn't, no.
No.
Yeah, we played a lot of golf with them. We got a chance to say hi to them, but we didn't really, you know, we give them their space, they're sort of living legends, and they were just kind of doing their own thing. Yeah. We were just stoked to be on the road with them, you know?
Yeah, they were very friendly, welcoming. But yeah, we didn't see a lot of them, really.
We left them to it.
And they left
us to it.
And you are touring a lot with Fontaines D.C., and there is obviously a symmetry in many ways with Wonder Horse and Fontaines D.C. And I'm wondering in terms of, you know, especially as a vocalist, Jacob, looking at Green Chatton and how he has sort of like takes care of his voice, what he does and everything else. Did you sort of get a chance to talk to him about, because they're a few years beyond Wonder Horse.
Did you
get to talk to him about that path?
I've spoken to him about it a few times, mainly just sort of both kind of sharing experiences of freaking out when you get a vocal infection or something. But I haven't actually done a deep dive with him about how he takes care of his voice. But the guy definitely tours a lot and manages to sound pretty good a lot of the time. So he must be doing something. I need to get into that. I don't know. I do a bit of this and that. It's definitely important if you want to keep the wheels rolling.
Yeah. I guess I'm hyper aware today because you're so sick.
Yeah,
so bad for you guys.
I'm really sick. Yeah, I'm just kind of, maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just like chicken noodle soup.
Chicken noodles with a matzo ball, since you're in New York City. Before we wrap up, I can't help but ask you about, Jacob, your experience at playing Paul Cook in Pistol. Yeah.
That wasn't actually me. That was my identical twin.
That was your identical twin. It was not your identical twin, but how did you come... Nice try. How did you come to work with Danny Boyle and get cast in this? This was obviously the Sex Pistols biopic, but not biopic, but series. How did you get cast by Danny Boyle?
I was working as a surf instructor at the time down in Cornwall, and someone called Emma sent me an email and said, "Oh, I've heard they're casting for this thing. You should audition for it. Can you act?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think so, but I'll audition for it anyway." And I went through the audition process and managed to get it. And I actually really loved it. Like, I loved doing the work and being involved in such a different world. It was a great opportunity, you know, and I kind of went somewhere I never thought I'd go with my life.
So Rain, which is the second track on this album, is just explosive. You want to hear it in a stadium. It is just an absolutely incredible track. Where did this one come from? Was this done at Pachyderm?
That was written. Yeah, I just had the riff, and then everyone just literally on the spot just started basically playing it how you hear it. Then it was this weird like alchemic thing, and I think everyone just came in with their parts kind of straight away. Yeah,
it was probably the most instinctive.
Yeah,
song.
One song I remember least actually coming to be, I think, because it happened so quickly.
Right. What time of year were you there, by the way, at Pachyderm?
We went twice.
You went twice?
Yeah, we went once in May and once in
November.
November.
A short stint, but yeah.
So was Rain, you have not many memories of Rain, Harry?
Oh, well, I have not many memories of many things. I think it just happened so quickly. I have very, very vivid memories of some particular songs when they came, like Aeroplane or Midas or Superman. But Rain comes into the box of the void.
Box of the void. So you are touring for Midas, you have broken through in an entirely new way with the second album. So now, how does this all sort of lay out what you really want to do next with Wonder Horse? You know, do you tend to like sort of sit back and wait until you're through the bulk of the touring before you even think of the next step?
I don't think we have a plan.
No plan.
No. I think we're just going to kind of
think. I think we're going to do, I think on tour we're going to attempt to stay busy and keep writing in our spare moments. Mm-hmm. We will definitely be, or even have started thinking.
We're definitely
about
planning
record.
To make some money at some point.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
That'd
be nice.
Don't all still have day jobs, do you?
Yeah, we do.
You do?
Well, I do, yeah.
Real quick, Pete, what do you do?
I work in a bakery at the moment.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a cool job. What, Jamie?
I'm landscape gardener/builder sometimes.
And Harry?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything else other than music at the moment.
And are you still, Jacob, are you doing are you still a surf instructor? Surfing instructor?
Professional sandcastle builder. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'd definitely do it again because we're touring a lot and I only managed to get down to Cornwall because a lot of the work, even when we're not touring, is based around London. But I'd definitely be more than happy to take a class again at the surf school I worked at in Cornwall. That was a lot of fun. I'd definitely do that again, you know.
Well, there's definitely sort of ocean and surfing and wave vibes throughout this entire album. It's called Midas. The band is Wonder Horse. Jacob, Harry, Jamie, Pete, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And we're going to hear Rain right now in Studio A on FUV Live Sessions. Thank you guys so much.
Crawl up on your shoulders, did it coil around your nail? Did it slowly snatch the sunlight out of every waking day? And you banish it, you vanish it, but something staring still remains in the empty frame. And do you feel that way? Do you feel the rain in the quiet of some disaster? You will turn and face yourself again, cause you thought that someone somewhere might be calling out your name. As the fly inside the clockwork skews our futures as they're hammered on the page. Ain't it strange? Do you feel the rain? Ain't it feel the rain? Do you feel the rain?
That was Wonder Horse in session and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to the band for joining us in the studio and to Communion Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Gwen Taylor. Our WFUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Diana Juarez. Megan Aftermath is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.